In the Golgotha City, known as the Parade of the Endless, everyone goes to the arenas. To see men fight men, singly or in groups, or men fight aliens, or aliens fight aliens. Just so long as somebody dies. Blood is blood, whatever the color. But it's the men the audiences really love to cheer and boo, down on the bloody sands. All human life and death is there, right in front of you, up close and personal. There's never an empty seat in the stands or the boxes, and season tickets are handed down from generation to generation. The arenas are the only thing all classes in the Empire have in common, and there's never a shortage of volunteers to risk their lives and their honor in the ring, for wealth or privilege or just the applause of the crowd. A few even make a living out of it, for a time. And the greatest fighter of them all, the one every man wanted to fight and every woman wanted to bed, the man who never backed down from any challenge and eventually retired undefeated, was that mysterious and enigmatic figure behind the featureless steel helm, the Masked Gladiator. Two men wore that mask, though the crowds never knew. The first was George McCracken, who retired unbeaten when he decided he was getting too old and slowing down. He trained his successor, Finley Campbell, who became the second Masked Gladiator. George McCracken was killed during the rebellion while wearing the steel helmet, and his dead body was unmasked during a live broadcast by Toby Schreck. Finley had banned himself from the arenas for many reasons, but he still maintained his old quarters there in the living section deep under the sand. They were very modest, but Finley didn't care. They were just somewhere to stay where no one could find him, hidden behind a meaningless name, where he could rest and sleep and plot on how best to track down and murder his old enemy, Valentine Wolfe. The Clune and Esper Undergrounds had promised him Valentine's head on a stick in return for his services as an assassin, but now that the rebellion was over, it seemed they were far too busy to remember old friends and promises, so Finley had decided to do it himself. He couldn't just fire up a ship and go. Parliament had refused to grant him the same official status as the Deathstalker and the Dark Woman. They didn't trust him. He scared them. Some thought, not unreasonably, that he might use that official status to go after them. So they denied him a role in their precious new order and set their spies to watch him. Finley killed a few of them, now and again, just to keep the others on their toes. And quietly, unobtrusively, he prepared for his quest. So he was more than a little surprised when someone knocked quite openly on his door. He rose lively to his feet and drew his disruptor from the holster hanging on the bedpost. He padded silently over to the door and listened for a moment.
Who is it?
Jack Random and Ruby Journey. We'd like a quiet word, if it's not too much trouble.
Finley raised an eyebrow. He'd never had much contact with the legendary heroes during his time in the Rebellion, or after it, for that matter, and he had no idea why they should seek him out now. But if nothing else, their visit should prove interesting, and he could do with a break from his brooding. He undid the two locks, pulled back the three sets of bolts he'd added, and stepped smartly back as he swung open the door. Jack and Ruby were standing alone in the corridor, their hands empty. They looked at the gun in his hand, covering them both, but said nothing. Finley gestured for them to enter with his free hand, and then moved around behind them to lock and bolt the door again.
You can't be too careful these days. Not when you have as many enemies as I do.
Trust me, I know the feeling.
Finley kept a cautious distance between himself and his visitors.
Come in. Make yourself at home. Sorry, the place is a bit of a mess, but I shot the maid.
He smiled to show that it was a joke, and Jack and Ruby smiled back, before moving carefully past him into the room. They looked around in search of somewhere to sit. The room was large enough to pace about in, but still small enough to be cozy. The place really was a mess. Jack and Ruby had to step over things just to get to the two battered-looking chairs. Unwashed laundry lay in a heap in one corner, and dirty plates and cups filled the sink in the tiny kitchen annex. Several throwing knives protruded from the door. Jack dusted off the seat of his chair before sitting on it. Ruby didn't bother. Finley sat on the edge of the unmade bed, still covering them both with his disruptor. His gaze was cold and unwavering, and his hand was very steady.
So, what brings such illustrious company to my little bolt hole that no one is supposed to know about?
Robert told us where to find you.
It's always family that betrays you in the end.
We need to talk to you. There are things only you can tell us.
You're right there. I know all kinds of stuff. That's why so many people want me silenced. Which particular dirty little secret did you have in mind?
We'd like to ask you a few questions about Clan Campbell's dealings with Shub.
Jack kept a careful eye on Finley's disruptor.
Oh, that.
Finley scooted back in bed, leaned against the headboard, and slipped his gun back into its holster. Jack and Ruby relaxed just a little.
That's old history now. No one cares about it anymore. I thought one of my enemies had sent you to find out what I know and shut me up. I have lots of enemies, you know, from all sides of the political spectrum. You'd be surprised. Even the ungrateful undergrounds disown me these days, though I was once their blue-eyed boy. Any mission that was too dangerous, too difficult, or too suicidal for anyone else, send for Finley Campbell. I never said no. And I never once failed in a mission, never once let them down. They pointed me like a gun and I killed people. Now I can't even get anyone to return my calls anymore. My past excesses have made me a liability, an embarrassment. I helped win the war for them, but no one wants to know because I got my hands a little too dirty now and again. Once my current mission is brought to a close, I am going to come back and knock on their doors, and I won't take no for an answer. And then there will be a reckoning.
And what mission might that be, Sir Finley?
I'm going after Valentine Wolfe. He and I have unfinished business to discuss.
I should think everyone in the Empire has unfinished business with that bastard. Let's talk about Shub.
Let's not, and say we did.
Finley scowled intimidatingly at Ruby, and seemed a little taken aback when she just scowled right back at him.
Oh, well, if it'll get you out of here any quicker. My family made a deal with the AIs, their advanced tech, in return for the alien star drive. Supposedly it was all a con, with us stringing them out for as much as we could get before the AIs realized we had no intention of delivering. In reality, I don't know. My father always was very ambitious. He'd have made a deal with the devil to put himself on the throne. And maybe he did. We'll never know now. The deal died when the wolves destroyed my family. Afterwards, the wolves supposedly negotiated the deal for themselves. Valentine was in charge. What he got and what he promised in return, you'll have to ask him, if I don't get to him first.
And there's nothing more you can tell us about Shub's links with humanity? Please try and think, Sir Finley. It's important.
My father never trusted me with any details, and I never asked. I didn't care about such things, then.
Excuse me a moment. I've got a message coming in through my implant.
Jack moved over to the door so he could sub-vocalize to his comm unit in relative privacy. Finley and Ruby studied each other thoughtfully. They each recognized the warrior that the other was, and the same competitive fire began to burn in each of them. It had been a long time since they'd felt seriously challenged. Slowly, they both sat up straight, eyes narrowing.
So, I hear you're a fighter as well as a clothes horse. Any good with a sword?
I was taught by the best. Never once lost a fight. And I never needed esper tricks to win my battles.
Ruby showed her teeth in a mirthless smile.
Maybe we should try each other out sometime. Just steel on steel.
Sounds good to me.
They held each other's gaze, smiling the same death's head smile. Their hearts speeded up, and their breathing deepened. There was an almost sexual attraction in the air between them. The things they were both born to do, more important to them than life itself, they could feel it taking them over, becoming inevitable. Finley licked his lips.
When exactly did you have in mind, bounty hunter?
What's wrong with right now?
Not a damned thing.
Have you both gone mad? Of course, stupid question. Look, we don't have time for this. Sir Finley, put away your sword.
Finley smiled briefly.
After her.
Jack looked at Ruby.
I can't take my eyes off you for a moment, can I? Sheathe your sword.
Why do I have to go first?
Because you started it, that's for sure. And because I'm asking you to. We have to go right now. We're needed on an urgent mission.
Ruby reluctantly lowered her sword.
You're no fun anymore, Random.
Finley cautiously lowered his sword.
He
and Ruby exchanged a glance. Though neither of them said anything, they both knew the moment for the fight had passed.
She nodded to Kid Death.
There would be other times.
Does that still sound froggy?
Finley slipped his sword into the scabbard hanging from the bedpost and reclined on his bed again, propped up against the headboard,
she
the picture of casual ease. Ruby slammed her weapon back into its sheath and glared at Jack.
What's all this about a mission? I thought we had a mission running down the Shub connection.
This takes precedence. Apparently all hell is breaking out on Loki, and Parliament wants us there yesterday. Shub will have to wait.
Isn't it always the way? Start out doing one thing, and the next minute you're being sent somewhere else.
Finley stretched on the bed.
Story of my life. Let yourselves out. Try not to slam the door behind you.
Jack practically had to drag Ruby out of the room, but eventually they were gone, and Finley was left alone again. He stared up at the ceiling, his visitors already forgotten, taken up in his past again. Just lately, someone had been sending professional assassins after him. He didn't mind particularly. He was glad of the exercise. But none of them had lived long enough to name their employer or how they knew where to find him. It could have been almost anyone. With all the enemies he'd made, he was lost for choice. They were one of the reasons he decided to leave Golgotha and go after Valentine. It wasn't that he was worried for his own life, but there was always the chance the assassin's thwarted employer might try to get at him by attacking those he cared about, like Evangeline or Julian, and he couldn't risk that. Julian could probably take care of himself, but he couldn't guard Evangeline all the time, if only because she wouldn't let him. There had always been a part of her life where he wasn't welcome. Evie was very protective of her privacy. He knew there were things about her, secrets, mysteries, that he didn't know, but he'd never pressed her. She'd tell him when she was ready. Finley understood about secrets. He had enough of his own. Evie was away again at the moment, off doing something for the Clone Underground that he wasn't clear to know about. For all their proud talk of equality and fraternity, the Underground still didn't really trust anyone who wasn't a clone. Given how busy Evangeline had been with the Underground, even though the rebellion was officially over, Finley couldn't help wondering if they were trying to keep him and Evie apart, because he was only a human. And a damned aristo at that. Finley smiled briefly. It was probably even simpler than that. The Underground never had approved of him, even when they turned to him for the missions no one else could do. They thought he was crazy. And of course they were quite right. No sane person would have done what they wanted, taken the risks he had, and bathed in blood till it dripped from his soul. The problem came when the Empire finally fell, and everyone expected him to be sane all of a sudden. He could have told them that it didn't work like that. You couldn't go through all the things Finley had, do what he had done, lose all he had, and still be completely rational at the end of it. He'd been an assassin, and he'd loved it. He longed for action, for the thrill of the fight. Everything was so simple then. You knew where you were. No shades of gray, no politics, nothing to hold him back. Just do or fail, win or lose, live or die. And oh, the blood-red rush, the heart hammering in his breast, the joy at being the very best there was, and oh, the thrill of it all. The marvelous moment of murder. Nothing quite like it. It was an endlessly satisfying, hopelessly addictive drug. Perhaps he'd had more in common with Valentine Wolfe than he thought. Finley scowled. The comparison disturbed him. He made himself change the subject, turning his thoughts to the day's earlier events. He'd gone to see his extremely estranged wife, Adrienne, and their two children, and he still wasn't quite sure why. Perhaps because they were the only part of his past life that wasn't touched by what he'd become. Finley closed his eyes and let his mind drift back.